BangTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 25th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes or so, to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this Thursday edition of the program. Two professional handicappers joined me. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Going to hit over 20 college football games here for week 9 during that segment with Brad. Second part of today's show, Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. We'll chat with him about the NBA, NFL, and also one game from the Big 12 in college football. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. My apologies for being down here this morning. We had a little bit of a hiccup overnight with our database, so trying to correct that as quickly as possible. Hopefully, by the time you hear this show and by this afternoon, we'll have everything squared away over there. But updated NFL power ratings will be posted here whenever we get going again. College football power ratings were posted earlier on in the week. Situational articles for NBA, NHL, college football posted. Daily NHL picks, MLB picks, all kinds of stuff over there. Make sure that you check out everything that we have to offer. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up at DSI using promo code BANG100. You'll get a 100% deposit bonus at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here with me today. The first one, professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
Man, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And you know, you and I were talking before we started recording here a little bit that you know, neither one of us very enamored with the college football card this week. Feels like things are really tightening up.
Yeah, they are, but I'll say this. I don't expect it to last completely through the rest of the season. I mean, it makes some sense. I mean, you get a lot more data points on college football, but I would say it's more of an outlier week because what's going to happen here in a couple weeks, and especially with college basketball starting early, there's only 24. We're all constrained by time limits. There's only 24 hours in a day. And when you got, you know, 3, 4, 5 different sports going on, I don't care how many math models and how many hours and man hours you got. There'll be some soft spots in the market. And I tend to think, you know, some of the smaller conferences and particularly, I mean, if you want to do this professionally, if I'd give you one piece of advice right now, I would say pick a conference or two in college basketball, be reading up on it the next couple of weeks and hit the ground running here when college hoops starts in a couple of weeks if you want your best bang for your buck.
Definitely agree there. Conference specialization, certainly something you want to be cognizant of in college basketball. And I think another thing about college football here is that, you know, as I compare to my power ratings, I know your power ratings are always more efficient than mine are. I don't have a whole lot of edges from a numbers standpoint here this week. Those edges have been dwindling as it is, but very few games with big outliers here this week. So you have to go to the situational side. You have to go to the technical side, the matchup side. And as I look at this week's card, I just really don't see a whole lot of things that are out there. But also, as you mentioned, you know, college basketball coming up, obviously the NBA and NHL going on. You know, as we get deeper into the college football season here, we're going to have some more motivational type angles. Teams trying to get to bowl games, teams are trying to get bowl eligible at the very least, teams that are no longer bowl eligible. You know, maybe they've got one rivalry game left. That's the only game that they're going to worry about. So some of those situational elements will get a little bit stronger here over the next few weeks as well.
Yeah, and also keep an eye towards teams that are building towards next season with that new redshirt rule. Keep in mind, guys that, you know, freshmen and whatnot that haven't been playing all year can play now at the end of the season, you know, 2, 3, 4 games. And I'll be looking for maybe some coaches that are going to go youth movement. And to me, obviously, that'd be a negative for this year, positive for next season. Make sure you're keeping an eye towards that once we hit November.
That's always such an interesting thing to consider. I mean, like you said, it probably is a negative in the sense that young players are going to make mistakes. In some respects, though, it's a positive because if you've got a team that's down in the dumps right now with what they've got, at least that youth movement brings some exuberance, brings some energy back to the program. So you know, maybe those teams play a little bit harder, but again, the mistake-prone side of it, you can't overlook that at all.
Excellent point there. And that's why, again, two sides to every coin, and that's why this industry is more art than science.
All right, let's get into some games here for Week 9, and let's go ahead and start on Friday night. We actually have five games here on Friday. We talked about Miami and Boston College with our good buddy Ralph Michaels a couple of days ago. So with you, I want to start with game 117-118 here. Indiana-Minnesota cross-division matchup in the Big Ten. Indiana, a 2.5-point road favorite here. And, Brad, I think this is a real interesting handicap because you had Minnesota really get embarrassed in the second half against Nebraska as the Cornhuskers pick up their first win. Indiana should not have been in that game against Penn State, but because James Franklin let them back into it, they actually had a chance to win that game late. So you kind of wonder the mindset of the Hoosiers going up on the road here as a favorite.
Yeah, my number said Minnesota won, so I'm leaning on the Gophers. I know that's a 3.5-point difference, but when you're going through zero and you're under the 3-point spread here as far as Indiana being favored, I mean, it's not your typical, you know, 3.5 points of line value. But looking at it here, I mean, Minnesota's got some quarterback issues. You know, Zach Anixtead was KO'd last week. Tanner Morgan, I actually was impressed with watching Minnesota spring game. I actually expected him to be the starter this year. I was kind of stunned that they ended up going with a walk-on true freshman. Morgan looked all right. I mean, he was 11 out of 16 for 214 yards last week. You're right. You know, Indiana, you know, it's kind of a seesaw game. Both teams had seesaw back and forth games last week. I mean, Minnesota was down 28-0 before they rallied and made that game until getting then blown out in the end result. Indiana, I thought, they outplayed Penn State. I thought the big play would have been that 100, you know, that 97-yard kick return right after Indiana took the lead. I wasn't sure that Penn State was going to come away with a win there at that particular point. I'll just go with my numbers here, lean with the Gophers. Not a stronger play until I get official word on Annex at the quarterback for Minnesota.
Yeah, Indiana minus one for me. So we're basically in the same ballpark, especially as you mentioned, you know, crossing through zero. There's really not a whole lot of value there in that type of situation. And again, the nice thing is when you've got 50 or 60 games on the board, you know, you don't have to play that game just because it's 3.5 points off your number. You're not getting any key numbers or anything like that. Maybe if you can grab a three, I do see a straight three out there. You may take a look, but you know, again, lots of games on the card here to consider. So let's go down one spot by rotation order. Game 119-120, Utah on the road at UCLA. The Utes laying doubles here on the road for this trip to Los Angeles. There's something about this game that kind of makes me think, and my number here is 11.5, but there's something about this game that makes me think that UCLA can make this one too close for comfort.
Yeah, my number's 10 on it. I like Utah a lot. I mean, they were a team that I bet to win the Pac-12 of 15-1 in the preseason. I think they're going to end up winning the South, so that'll be a good hedging opportunity there. Both teams, you know, a little bit interesting finals last week. I thought Utah dominated much more than a 13-point win over USC indicated. They fell behind 14-0 early, but from that point forward, Utah just killed the Trojans. They got a red-hot quarterback, Tyler Huntley. Came into that game 31 out of 40 in his previous two games and then proceeded to go 22 out of 29 with four touchdowns. So I would say one of the – if you're a fantasy guy, Tyler Huntley, the Utah quarterback, has been giving you a lot of points the last 3 weeks. You know, UCLA kind of had a misleading game against Arizona. Keep in mind, it was an Arizona team playing with a backup quarterback. They were outgained in it. Arizona dominated the line of scrimmage. But I'll give UCLA credit with Wilton Spate and not Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who was injured early in the game. Wilton Spate looked all right. They you know, ran out the final 6.5 minutes after Arizona cut it to one. Short week in division, laying double digits. My numbers don't call for a strong play here, but, you know, situationally, I would say the spot says take UCLA plus the 10.5.
And UCLA has looked pretty good since that week 4 bye after the Fresno State game. They didn't play very well at Colorado the week coming out, but they played right with Washington October 6th, blowout win over Cal, but Cal turned the football over a ton. And last week against Arizona, as you mentioned. So UCLA is a tough team to power rate right now, I think, because they are showing the improvement we expected under Chip Kelly, but also, you know, how true is that improvement? I mean, are they a fraudulent team? Are they a team that is getting better? You know, you kind of wonder a little bit there with UCLA, but not a great spot for Utah. And I will say this, if Utah wins big this week, and it certainly is a possibility, with the inflated perception of them as they're getting stronger and stronger here, next week at Arizona State sets up as a pretty tricky game, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, no one's been able to get margin on the Sun Devils. I mean, yeah, Arizona State's 3-4, but all four losses by exactly 7 points apiece there. So that would be definitely a spot where I'll be looking to take probably Arizona State, although I think Arizona State's got a possible outright upset win at USC in them this weekend. So we'll see where that line is. I will say, you know, my strongest lean on the game, I don't think Utah's offense is getting enough credit from what they've done the last couple of weeks. UCLA starting to get things going. I actually prefer 54.5 over. Sounds pretty good to me, Utah-UCLA. That's what I would bet.
All right, let's go to game 131-132 here. Louisiana Tech and Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic, anywhere from a 3 to a 3.5 point favorite out there. A lot of 3.5s. Some of them have extra juice on the dog here in Louisiana Tech. Pretty interesting game here because you've got a Louisiana Tech team that's been very strong this season, really very strong over the last several seasons. Skip Holtz in that role where he's really good as an underdog, and an FAU team that's been a pretty massive disappointment this season.
Yeah, my numbers are still strong on FAU. I mean, it's my number 6 here, but I mean, obviously 1-6 against the number. Last week, -5 turnovers. That really hurt the Owls in that one. They actually had the yardage edge against Marshall. Missed 2 short field goals. Their quarterback, Robeson, left last week's game with an ankle injury. He's questionable. So that's a concern a little bit there. You know, meanwhile, I mean, the book's simple on Louisiana Tech. Kudos to you, tip of the cap. I know you're very strong on UTEP last weekend. That was an easy win, and you almost got an outright upset win. I mean, Louisiana Tech interception return touchdown early, and then I don't know if you saw it, but a beautiful play fake on a 4th down call with about 6 minutes left in the game. They had a 40-yard touchdown run by the quarterback. But, you know, Louisiana Tech bad as a favorite, good as a dog. Holtz 14-5 against the number since 2014 in the underdog role. Even though my numbers are relatively strong on Florida Atlantic, give me Louisiana Tech here plus the points, especially the hook.
All right, let's go to Saturday. Let's start with game 125-126 on the card. North Carolina State, they're getting some love this week for their road trip up to the Carrier Dome. Opened a 2-point dog. Now a 1.5 or 2-point favorite out there. And in fact, Matchbook, the offshore exchange, going up to 2.5. And that's usually a pretty good indicator of where the market will, you know, eventually wind up here at some point. So what do you think? Is it the Wolfpack or is it the Orange?
It's neither for me. So, I mean, I got NC State by, you know, by 1, so I don't see significant value. I mean, the more intriguing thing, I'm looking to make money, you know, for future weeks involving these two teams. It'll be interesting to see how NC State responds after getting their teeth kicked down their throat last week at Clemson. You know, a little bit of bubble burst there after their unbeaten season. Finley didn't look too good. You know, Syracuse, I want to see what they do at the quarterback spot because Tommy DeVito ended up replacing – not an injured Eric Dungy, believe it or not, but a struggling Eric Dungy at quarterback. You know, DeVito kind of helped the win there, throwing for 3 touchdown passes. Obviously, the value's been lost with NC State. No bet for me. I mean, again, I got NC State by 1.
I mean, maybe Eric Dungy's struggling because that cat's been a crash test dummy while Dino Babers has been there at Syracuse. So maybe he's just kind of running out of gas a little bit. But also, this circles back to a point that you mentioned earlier on in the show about, you know, coaches maybe looking to set things up for the future. You know, for Syracuse, there's no delusions of grandeur with this team. They're not going to win the ACC. They're not going to find a way to somehow get in front of Clemson and get to the ACC title game. They're going to win 6 games. They're going to go to their bowl game, and that's going to be that. You know, Dungy's a guy that will be moving on after the season. DeVito will have the keys to this offense. So, you know, we may start to see some of these things, even from competitive teams where, you know, the coaches understand, hey, I got to start looking at next year.
That's a good call. Although I'll say Syracuse, I mean, sitting on 5 wins, haven't been to a bowl game here recently. I think they want to win. So I think, and you saw that last week, I don't know if that was necessarily going youth movement. That was, you know, find a way to get a, you know, a 5th victory on the season against North Carolina. And I think they'll go at all costs to possibly get a win here. Now, they got Wake and Louisville on deck. I think, I mean, obviously, Syracuse is going to be favored in both of those, but I think right now, Syracuse, I don't see a motivation issue with them. They want to win and get to at least a bowl berth here, and that'll show significant progress, obviously, in year 300 Babers.
All right, let's go to the Big Ten West here. Early kickoff in Evanston between Wisconsin and Northwestern, game 139-140 on the card. Wisconsin opened a 6.5-point favorite. We really haven't seen too much movement here on the side. Some places up to 7, some places down to 6. Total's gone up a little bit from 51.5 to 53. You know, you and I had some we had some interesting back and forth about Northwestern and some of the power ratings numbers that I had in the middle of the season here. But I've got this one on 7, so I guess I've made the proper adjustments.
Yeah, and kudos to you. You got the Michigan one right, although Michigan's been pretty dominant since that one. So I'll tip the cap to you. You definitely had that one right. But the Wolverines have looked the part since then. You know, Northwestern, we talk about, well, what's the story with them? What's the book? The book is to take an underdog in their games. Going back to the last game of the bowl game of last year, the underdog in Northwestern games, 8-0 against the spread. Basically, Northwestern, a terrible favorite. You saw it last week. They're laying more points on the road than they ever had in the history of the school, and they almost lose outright to a pitiful Rutgers team. But now they're back home, you know, getting points here. You saw that performance against Michigan earlier this season. Although I'll say this, is it this game they're going to be really up for? I get it that they're, you know, contending in the Big Ten West, or is it next week when they get, you know, the Fighting Irish at Ryan Field for the first time in like 60 years? That's the question mark I have. I'm leaning with Northwestern here. My number's 5. If you can find a rogue, you know, some of those rogue sevens out there, obviously I like that stronger. Lean on the Wildcats, but my preferred take will be taking, you know, if you like Northwestern in the underdog role, why take 6.5 this week when you're going to get 10 or more next week against Notre Dame, a Notre Dame team fresh off the option. And I think Notre Dame, after playing Navy, has not been a good look for them the last 10 years, a little bit banged up after the option. I'll really like Northwestern next week against Notre Dame.
And also for Notre Dame coming back from San Diego. And we'll talk about that game a little bit later in the show. But also looking ahead to Northwestern, they're going to get their asses kicked on November 10th against Iowa on the road at Kinnick Stadium. That now sets up as a really bad spot for them with this Wisconsin game, with that Notre Dame game, as you mentioned. They're in a position to maybe get run off the field in that game against Iowa. But again, Fitzgerald's really good as an underdog coach. So I don't know. I mean, I think as I look at it right now and as I kind of circle that spot, I feel like I'm going to be on Iowa in that situation. But, you know, that could be the game if Northwestern pulls the upset here. You know, I mean, they're sitting real pretty in the Big Ten West. So does that cheapen that Notre Dame game for them a little bit, worrying about the chance at a conference title? Northwestern's real interesting the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I mean, keep in mind, Pat Fitzgerald was a part of the upset. I was in the stadium when Northwestern was a 4-touchdown underdog in an opener in 1995 against Notre Dame, and that started the purple to Pasadena there. And Fitzgerald was obviously an All-American linebacker for Northwestern at that time. I still think he's got, you know, I would say warm, fuzzy feelings about getting up for Notre Dame. And they also, you know, just a few years ago went in the South Bend as a 17 or 18 point underdog and won the game outright. So I'm pretty sure that they'll get up for the Fighting Irish. If they don't, I'll be stunned.
It's an interesting run for Northwestern here, especially as a one-dimensional team. I mean, they kind of got the running game going a little bit last week, and if they can sustain that, that's obviously going to help them significantly long term. But it's really been the Clayton Thorson show ever since Jeremy Larkin retired. So we'll see if they have any kind of balance here this week against Northwestern, because they could certainly use it the next 2 weeks against Notre Dame and Iowa. How about game 157-158? It's one of the stranger games of the week here. I actually have a fairly strong opinion on this one between Northern Illinois and BYU. This number's down from 8 to 7 as the Huskies make the trip to Provo.
Ooh, I'm anxious to hear your take. Here's mine. I got BYU at 8 is my number on the game. And I really like Northern Illinois for the season. I think you make some money on them. Both teams come in off a bye, but I don't know. I saw something, you know, with the change of quarterback for BYU in the previous game. against Hawaii, really energized that program. They went to a true freshman. BYU never goes to a true freshman. His name is Zach Wilson. He's the youngest starting quarterback. He's only 19 years old. Youngest starting quarterback in the history of the program. Really gave him, I would say, dynamic, able to run out of there. Tanner Mangum wasn't able to do that. I like BYU here, and I also kind of like the over as well. So give me the Cougars and the over. I'm interested to see what your take is.
Yeah, I like BYU in this one too. Like you, my number is right on 8. So this isn't necessarily a power ratings look or anything like that. This is a miserable spot for Northern Illinois. Yes, they're off of a bye, but they just beat Ohio to get a really important conference win there in the MAC. They play Akron in Maction next week, then Toledo November 7th. So they basically play 3 games in 11 days, 2 of them conference games. I have a hard time seeing them getting up for this one here to go and travel out to Provo. Yeah, BYU is a good team, but you got to go play in the altitude. And also BYU, they're going to have been home for a month. 2 home games, then the bye, then this one. Yeah, they're at Boise State next week. Maybe that's a little bit of a spot that they kind of peak at, just, you know, because that is a little bit of a rivalry between those two schools. But, man, I have a hard time taking Northern Illinois here this week. So it's BYU for me, and I think this is going to be on my golden nugget card. I know you're in that as well.
And you are doing very well on that. I think I'm only hitting like 62% or something. I'm only like 35th. I think you're doing well, and our good buddy Ralph Michaels from Cal Sports, he's doing exceptionally well. What's he in, 3rd or 4th place? My goodness, I tell you, tough crowd this year. I mean, compared to what I see in the Super Contest, I would say even with 300 people compared to nearly 3,000, a lot of sharp people in the Nugget this year.
Yeah, our entry's tied for 11th. Rolf's up there in 4th. I think he's tied for 4th, so he's doing real well there with that. And, you know, I'm doing absolute shit in the Super Contest. So, you know, it's been the college picks in the Golden Nugget for me that have kind of carried me. And I know you've been having quite a bit of success in the NFL and college this year. So, you know, kudos to you for that and for the season that you're having. All right, let's go to game 159-160 here. San Diego State and Nevada. One of my other winners in the Nugget last week was San Jose State, who was right there with the Aztecs in some respects, or maybe even the better team in that game. Now San Diego State on the road in Reno, 2.5-point favorite, taking on that Nevada air raid offense. Interesting matchup here for Rocky Long's team.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was going to really come in strong on Nevada because it wasn't just last week against San Jose State. And there wasn't anything fluky in that game last week. It wasn't like San Diego State had 5 turnovers and nearly lost outright as a 4-touchdown favorite. San Jose State, you know, played even with them for that game. That was a legit one there. You know, San Diego State, I thought, didn't look necessarily that great against the Air Force either. I thought the number come a little higher because of the past history and the pedigree of San Diego State came pretty low. I wouldn't be a bit surprised Nevada wins the game outright. I like what I've seen from Nevada. I was on Nevada last week. They hammered Hawaii on the islands pretty good as field goal underdogs there. And they even did so despite being -3 in turnovers. So that's a little bit of, I would say, value. Intriguing one here because I've had a lot of people ask me, and I would consider them to be sharper, were asking me what I thought of San Diego State betting them this weekend. But I just can't do it. I mean, all respect that to Rocky Long. I actually lean on Nevada, the Wolfpack here. Even though my numbers are right around 3.5-4 on San Diego State, I don't like the spot here for the Aztecs.
I got this one 3, and I think Nevada is much improved this year. And I kind of thought that they were going to be an improved team. And you know, they've got 4 reasonable shots at wins here. They need 2 of them to get bowl eligible and get to that magic 6 number. Nevada's been pretty good this year. I think you and I both had them favored last week against Hawaii, both of us cashing tickets there in that one. I mean, this San Diego State team, okay, fine. They played Boise State, but their other 2 conference games, Air Force and San Jose State, they've scored 56 points in 3 conference games. And Nevada's defense is not great, but it's improved. You know, their defense is much better than it was last year. So, you know, San Diego State, struggling to score against Air Force and San Jose State. And I get it. Air Force runs the triple option. You've got a limited number of possessions. But, man, I don't know how many points San Diego State can actually score here in this game. The total coming down from 47.5 to 46. I think that's the right side in the game is maybe to look at the under. But you know, for San Diego State here, I mean, that game against Fresno State on the road November 17th, that's not setting up real well for them right now.
No, unless they get back, you know, Washington and running back and Chapman at quarterback by that time. Keep in mind, they are playing with a backup running back and a backup quarterback. Still stunning that they went into Boise. I had them. I got real square and used Boise on a money line, you know, big favorite parlay. Man, I'm going to look back at that one and say, how in the hell did I lose that damn game at Boise State as a 13.5-point favorite against San Diego State? I'm still stunned by that result. That's one of the more head-scratching finals of the football season so far.
All right, big game here in this one in the Pac-12 game, 161-162, Washington State, big emotional win over Oregon, College game day in Pullman. Now they go to Palo Alto to take on Stanford. Stanford, a 3-point favorite here in this one.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just, you know, a little bit higher on Stanford and a little bit lower on Washington State, but my number's 6 here. And that's not even taking into consideration the situational edge for Stanford. So I really like the Cardinal here. It's probably one of my favorite plays of the week. I don't think Stanford gets enough credit for their home field. Last 11 years, they're 59-9 straight up, 40-28 against the spread, coming off a rare home loss to Utah. The Utah team's pretty good, and keep in mind Stanford had 4 key turnovers in that one. Yeah, to me, it's about the letdown. I mean, here's how big of a letdown. I mean, I thought there was a letdown during the game against Oregon after all the buildup and the 27-0 start at halftime. So I just don't see it here. I know Washington State's been a little bit of a bad matchup for Stanford the last couple of seasons, but I like the spot here for Stanford, laying a reasonable number of 3 here. And look, Washington State's got a couple of good home wins against Utah and Oregon. But who have they played? Non-conference, Wyoming, San Jose State, Eastern Washington. The only legit road team they played was USC. I get it. It was a close game. They could have won. But last I checked, Stanford's better than USC. Laying a good number here. Give me the Cardinal.
I got this one 2.5, so I'm pretty close to the market there. But I certainly understand what you're saying about Stanford. And keep in mind here with Stanford, too, and we talked about them quite a bit a few weeks ago, that stretch of at Oregon, at Notre Dame, home against Utah is one of the tougher stretches we've seen here in college football this year. You know, you play 2 road games, including the long trip to South Bend, then play that physical Utah team. It's a really tough situation to be in. Then the bye, Thursday night game, you won on the road at Arizona State. Now extra time for Washington State. You know, I think Stanford is a much better team than what their record and what their body of work would indicate. And again, keeping in mind that they probably shouldn't have won that game against Oregon that they won. This should be a team that's 4-3 right now, but they played a brutal schedule, and now they've had a little bit of time to rest up, refocus. The thing for them, even if you don't have a play this week, they're at Washington next week. So another tough spot for the Cardinal.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get a win, I'd prefer to get one right now. I think they're well rested up. I mean, they've only played 1 time since October 6th, had a bye prior to the Arizona State game. That was Thursday. Forgot to mention that. They got a couple extra days to prep here. Yeah, very tough schedule for the Cardinal, and even tricky road games at Cal and at UCLA. I mean, after the Washington game, they'll be favored in their final 3 games, but those last 2 road games aren't layups for them. So, yeah, this is a kind of a circle the wagons type of game. And keep in mind, last year that they lost a close one to Washington State. So I think this is kind of a game that they circled. Yeah, I've been just higher on Stanford. I mean, I really liked them last week against Arizona State. I was on a big-time island there. They got me a win. I'm going right back to them. Sometimes I'll be a little square in that. They've been good to me, Stanford, and hopefully they're good to me on Saturday night.
Yeah, and again, one thing to keep in mind here is as we start, you know, you mentioned some teams kind of, you know, using the youth movement here at the tail end of the season, how that benefits for next year. This goes without saying, but when you're looking at season win totals, you have to consider the schedules, consider the spots here, because again, we're talking about a Stanford team, 4 really spots here over the course of the season that can impact the season win total market. And we're not going to talk about this game. And I know you and I mentioned it a little bit before we came on the air here. Texas Tech is facing its 3rd straight opponent on extra rest. Iowa State had the bye last week. Whoever they played the week before that, Kansas, they were off of a bye. Kansas is terrible, but still. And then also TCU had extra rest when those 2 teams played on Thursday night. So, again, those types of scheduling situational spots, you always want to keep in mind as you're looking ahead at an upcoming season. All right, so let's stay in the Pac-12 here. Let's talk game 165-166, Washington and Cal. Washington's up to an 11.5-point favorite here on the road in Berkeley.
I lean Cal here, but, I mean, I don't trust Cal. I've had them a few times this year, and, you know, if they play a clean game, this is one where I just need to see one stat. If you were to – I would have maybe one of my biggest bets of the year if you just, after the fact, just let me look at one stat, not yards, not pass yards, rush yards, first downs, whatever. I just need to see turnovers. If you're going to tell me Cal has one or less turnovers, I say they get the cover here. Two or more turnovers, I say they get crushed here by Washington. Cal, the previous three games coming into the Oregon State game, well, it was ridiculous how many turnovers, 14 of them in three games, and five defensive touchdowns against them. Played a clean game, made a quarterback change, a much-needed one last week, and what they crush Oregon State. So I lean Cal on this one, but I've had them several times and went down in flames. Lean on the over a little bit here. I think, if Cal hasn't had a problem all year moving the football, then maybe they will against Washington's defense. If they're turning the ball over, obviously these defenses have turned it into points. So a slight lean on the over as well as Cal.
All right, let's move to game 169-170 here. UNLV, San Jose State. We got a couple of teams this week that are in favorite roles that are virtually never favorites. So I wanted to touch on those here, San Jose State being one of them. They opened a 2-point dog, steady stream of line movement here on the Spartans, up to a 3-point favorite at several shops and matchbook 3 with extra juice on San Jose State.
Wow.
So, Brad, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, give me UNLV. I mean, it's the first time San Jose State's been favored over an FBS team since the end of the 2016 season, so a year and a half. My number had UNLV favored by 2, so this is one, especially to me, the buy signals especially go off when it's hit the 3 number here. I'll take the Rebels plus the points. I like what I've seen from the quarterback, Max Gilliam. The last couple of weeks, he's settling into the role. Obviously, it was a meltdown the first game against New Mexico. Yeah, I can't trust San Jose State as a favorite, even though they were impressive last week against San Diego State. Give me the Rebels.
I had this one, UNLV -1. I won't be involved, but I will tell you this. In preparation for the Nugget last week, I watched all 22 minutes of Brent Brennan's press conference, his media availability before that game against San Diego State. I did walk away impressed. I mean, this is a guy that I think he's the right kind of fit for a program like this where it's hard to get a lot of talent in there. So you have to take 2 and 3 stars and really maximize and get them to buy in. I think he's that kind of guy. The thing is, it's just hard to get talent there. So, you know, he was a very good speaker. I think he's very, you know, like I said, the right kind of fit for a program like that. But again, to put them in a favorite role with expectations, that would be a little bit scary for me. So, like, you would be UNLV or nothing in that one. How about we drop down one spot here? Tulane and Tulsa had a listener request about this one. Tulsa down from 2.5 to 1.5 for this AAC showdown.
My number is 1.5, so it's right on the number for me. I don't have a team's reeling a little bit in this one. You know, Willie Fritz and Tulane's been a disappointment. I expected more out of them, I would have had a small lean on Tulane plus 2.5 at the current 1.5 number. I can't really trust either team, and I question the mindset of either team at this point.
All right, let's go to the SEC East here. Game 175-176, Kentucky and Missouri. This is a number that's gotten a little bit of run here on my Twitter timeline this morning. I think it's a game that's going to be talked about a fair amount here as we head into the weekend. We were in a similar type of spot a couple of weeks ago. Colorado was a top 20 team going on the road to take on USC. USC was a touchdown favorite, won that game 31-20. Colorado scored some points in the fourth quarter to make that look a lot better than it actually was. How do you think this one plays out here with Missouri now showing 7.5 in a couple of places at home against Kentucky?
Yeah, remarkable. A team that's unranked in the AP polls laying, 7.5 over a team that's number 12 in the AP poll. To me, obviously, I contrasting styles here. Missouri likes to go up-tempo. you know, throw it all over the yard with Drew Lock. Kentucky, I mean, had 18 yards passing last week, so they prefer to ground and pound. To me, you know, correlation. I mean, the Harris, I would say the correlated parlay of the week. If you like Kentucky, you got to like the under. If you like Missouri, you like the over. Whoever dictates tempo, I think, will win in this one. Here's my concern back in Missouri. I think Drew Lock's so overrated. I mean, he pads his stats so much over a group of five teams like he did last week against Memphis, FCS teams, crappy teams in the SEC. In his career, 64 touchdowns, 9 picks against those teams. When he plays a Power 5 bowl team, Kentucky, last I checked, 6 wins, they're going to be in a bowl game. 21 touchdowns, 28 interceptions in his career.
Wow.
Look, I think Kentucky's overrated. I don't like their offense outside of Benny Snell, but I do think Kentucky's defense is legit. I'll take the Wildcats, especially if I'm getting more than 7 here.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to be pushed into taking this one. I've got this line, Missouri minus 4, and I hate Kentucky. I'm on record on this show as saying I think Kentucky's a gigantic fraud. I got to watch them when South Carolina played them. I've watched a couple of their other games as well. I just don't think that they're a very good team. Benny Snell is great. The offensive line is solid. The defense, I think, has been able to shine a little bit because they caught Florida before they got pretty good, and then South Carolina just turned the football over too much. So I think Kentucky's defense, while it's solid, I think it has overachieved a little bit. And yet, as much as I don't like this team, I still have power ratings value on them. So that's kind of a pretty good indicator for me that if I can grab one of those rogue 7.5s, Bookmakers got one, Five Dimes has one with extra juice, Heritage has got one. There are places to find them. I think 7.5, I might have to take it just based on principle alone. How about we stay in the SEC East here? Tennessee and South Carolina. South Carolina, 7.5, 8-point favorites here. Against a Volunteers team that's really improved over the last few weeks.
They have, and the market must think so, because I thought this one came a little short. I thought it would be closer to 10, the number. And I'd like the spot for South Carolina off a bye. Tennessee's off a physical game against Alabama. They're outclassed from start to finish. I just got pure power rings lean for me, and I'm anxious to hear it because you're Mr. South Carolina. I like the Gamecocks here, although I prefer to be laying 7. But again, I thought the number would be 10.
I got this one even a little bit higher than 10, but I probably haven't been aggressive enough on Tennessee because, you know, I mean, I think it's one of those things where, and this isn't Tennessee's fault, but winning on the road at Auburn should have meant more to me than it actually did. But Auburn's just in free fall mode right now. So I'm not really sure how to accurately evaluate that type of performance there for the Volunteers. South Carolina, maybe I haven't been aggressive enough downgrading, but, you know, Muschamp off a bye, defense is better than it's played. Bentley should be healthy here. And, you know, when Bentley doesn't turn the football over, South Carolina is a pretty good team. So I do have this one a little bit higher, but again, I have trust issues with the Gamecocks right now from what I've seen here so far this season. How about we jump down to a game that I think we're both going to have pretty interesting opinions on here. Game 187-188, Purdue on the road in East Lansing, 12 o'clock kickoff against Michigan State. Michigan State, 1.5-point favorite out there.
Yeah, you know, originally, I mean, when the line came out on, you know, Sunday, I wanted to take Michigan State. I mean, come on. I mean, just this handicapping 1-on-1. Purdue's off arguably one of their biggest wins in the history of the school. Very dominant against Ohio State. And I'm Mr. Jeff Brohm. I mean, I'll lead as far as the fan club for Jeff Brohm. I think he's excellent. I think he's a top 10 coach in the country. That's how much I like Jeff Brohm. Don't believe me. Ask the folks at Western Kentucky how they're doing without Jeff Brohm. It's only year two, but, I mean, look at how that program fell off the face of the earth. I would really prefer Michigan State to be healthier than what they are. You know, Felton Davis, their best wide receiver's out, along with a multitude of other injuries. I got to wonder what Michigan State's mindset here. So, yeah, I would generally like to fade Purdue off that big win. I just wish Michigan State was a little healthier here. Slight lean on Michigan State. At 1.5, but a lot of smart people that I trust are on the Purdue, and they're boiling up with the Purdue here.
You're going to have to make room on the board for me with that Jeff Brohm fan club, because I mean, I was impressed going back to Western Kentucky, but then actually getting a chance to really watch a Purdue game. And of course, you know, I mean, maybe I'm cherry picking one example because they were so good against Ohio State, but love the play design. they were the faster team in that game. They were faster than Ohio State, which is so disappointing as a Buckeyes fan, kind of an indictment on what's going on with the Ohio State coaching staff there. I also love Nick Holt. I think Nick Holt is a top 10 defensive coordinator in the country too. So I love everything about Purdue. Yes, there's the letdown factor here, but also for Michigan State, how depressing is it to have less than 100 yards against Big Brother with Michigan? I mean, it's just, how do you get over that? How do you get past that? I don't know. I think for Purdue, because Brohm is that good of a coach, I don't think you look at it as a letdown spot as much as looking at it as this is a springboard for what we can be in the Big Ten West as long as Jeff Brohm sticks around. And if he bolts for Louisville, you know, obviously with some ties there, I don't blame him for that. But I think this Purdue team, not only do I like them a little bit this week, even though my number is Michigan State -2.5, I'm going to make a call right now that Purdue wins the Big Ten West next year as long as Brohm stays.
They could win this year. They get Iowa and Wisconsin at home. So if they win this game against Michigan State that, you know, Iowa follows, if they get by this one, they already got one loss in the opener against Northwestern, I might consider them maybe the favorite in the Big Ten West. Keep in mind, those three early losses, all coin flip games, all went against Purdue. They're even better than their record indicates. So, yeah, I'm buying them. I hope Jeff Brohm doesn't go that, you know, 2 hours south to Louisville. I would much prefer him to go that hour and 15 minutes slightly to the northeast in a town called South Bend, Indiana.
I've kind of figured that would be the way that you would go with that. I mean, certainly Brian Kelly, not a guy that you and I are part of that fan club. We don't have to worry about board seats for that fan club at all. All right, how about game 199-200, New Mexico State and Texas State? I told you we're going to touch on two games with teams that really are in rare air in terms of being favored. The Bobcats fit that description.
Yeah, I love it because this is why I do this show, because I won't get asked a question about this game unless I'm doing this show. You know, to me, it's kind of what we call a good old inside-out handicap. So I'm leaning with New Mexico State. Why? Misleading game last week for New Mexico State. Lost by 17 to Georgia Southern. First downs even. They were -3 in turnovers in the game, and it was still tied late, you know, in the second quarter. Flip side, Texas State got a cover against UL Monroe, but were dominated in the box score. And they were +2 turnovers in that one, including, you know, a couple of ones that directly led to points. So it's what we call in the industry a little inside-out handicap. I think that gives some value on New Mexico State.
When's the last – I'm sure you have it in front of you there. Maybe you put it in the newsletter there. Texas State, 3-point favorites. When's the last time they were favored over an FBS team?
Ooh. You know what? I don't have it. And usually I do, man. You caught me on one. There's so many of these that I find each and every week. I don't know. The market gets sharper and sharper each week, so you find teams in unique roles. Probably hasn't happened for them. I got it in front of me. It hasn't happened since 2015 for them. They were 7-point favorite against UL Monroe.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, again, when you see teams like that favorite out there in the marketplace and taking on money, pretty interesting type of role there for the Texas State Bobcats. How about a couple of teams that are more household names here? Clemson, Florida State. Clemson on the road in Tallahassee for an early kickoff. You know, the network executives certainly hoping this would be a primetime game. It's not, and Clemson's a 17-point favorite at some of the shops out there offshore. A lot of 16.5s as well, but this number went up a little bit, and it just feels like, Brad, Clemson has hit that second, even third gear. They're just kicking ass and taking names right now.
Yeah, I mean, they made the right move going to Lawrence at quarterback. I mean, he just gives them the best chance to beat Alabama. I've heard people talk. You know, who's got the best chance to beat Alabama? Is it, you know, Michigan with their defense? No. I mean, is it Oklahoma because they have a really good offense? No. I got to go with personnel. I got to go with head coaches. It's Clemson, guys. I mean, I get it that they played the last 3 years. That's the only team, in my opinion, right now that has a shot of beating Alabama. I know people are going to ask, 17, big number. When's the last time Florida State was catching 17 at home? I'll give you the answer. Never. Never. Florida State's largest home underdog role ever this week is against Clemson. And, you know, I'm not running to the window to bet Florida State. How I'll attack it, though, I do think that they'll be hyped up. We saw them play well in a rivalry game against Miami earlier this year. That offensive line didn't hold up in the end, and I'm not sure they can hold up for all four quarters here against that Clemson defensive front. But I'm going to bet Florida State in the first half. I'm hoping I'm going to get that 10 out there in the marketplace, the first half line, and that'll be my favorite bet here.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense. How about we go out west? Let's go to San Diego. Navy, Notre Dame. Notre Dame laying up to 24. Now, this was 21.5. Long trip for both of these teams here from Annapolis and, of course, South Bend. What do you think about this one? I mean, this is a big number in an option game. We're going to have a limited number of possessions.
Yeah, but you know what? Houston had a limited number last week. Didn't have problems scoring against Navy. In fact, I mean, Houston held the ball for 17.5 minutes. That's it. 17.5 minutes, had 570 yards and 49 points against Navy. Navy's been one of my biggest disappointments of this entire season. Malcolm Perry looks like he's been upgraded to probable. I think that's a positive for Navy's offense. I definitely can't trust Notre Dame in a significant favorite role here, even though they're coming off the bye. If you just blindly bet on Notre Dame since Lou Holtz left as a double-digit favorite, you're only hitting 41%. That's with a large sample size. I prefer the total here. I get it that there's going to be limited possessions and whatnot. I don't have 100% confidence that Notre Dame, even though they play Navy every year, always struggle against the option stopping it. But on the flip side, I definitely can't trust Navy stopping in Notre Dame, especially with an accurate quarterback in Ian Book. I like the over.
Well, and one other thing to keep in mind here for Navy, one of the reasons why I faded them from a season win total standpoint, the travel schedule. In San Diego this week, at Cincinnati next week, in Orlando to take on Central Florida the following week. So Navy, probably a little bit of a long-term fade here as we go forward. Then, of course, they get back-to-back option offenses to end the year, Tulane on the road in New Orleans, and then Army in that neutral site game in that Army-Navy Week 15 game. So Navy probably a bit of a long-term fade for me, which is kind of a bummer because they already have been a fade team, but a team I am looking to go against. One more game I want to touch on here with you, Brad. Oregon and Arizona, game 209-210. Oregon's a 9.5-point favorite for this one. Not a particularly great spot for the Ducks.
No, it's not. After two big games against Washington State, and their playoff hopes are gone now with two losses. You know, Arizona's better than the game indicated last week. Again, they could have gotten the outright upset. Why are they 9.5-point, home dogs? It's because Khalil Tate is questionable. Look, coming into the season, I thought Khalil Tate was one of the most valuable players in the country. Right now, what's his worth? A couple points? I mean, it's not being priced that way. I thought Rhett Rodriguez did a decent job last week for Arizona at quarterback. I have a slight lean on Arizona here, plus the 9.5.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. We'll skip the pick six here because we ran a little bit long with all the games that we were talking about. Well, what do you have going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, I talk about it each week. It's just my newsletter, and I say just. I mean, I do give you a game write-up on every single college game, every single NFL game each week, in addition to all my power rings, all my computer-projected lines on every single game, major injuries, misleading finals, bad beats. You name it, and a heck of a lot more. You get it emailed to you weekly throughout the course of the season, every single Wednesday, now through the Super Bowl. The price is just $59. You're going to go to bradpowersports.com, and I get it. We're in an industry where, I mean, how do the picks do? 5 college football picks each week, 3 NFL picks each week, last 7.5 weeks. Those best bets, 40-13, 75%. 75% is not sustainable. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing the show with Adam. I'd just be betting, the mortgage on my home, on my picks. But buy it for the information. The picks are a bonus. Get it now. It's called the Powers Picks Newsletter. Go to bradpowersports.com.
And, of course, you can follow Brad on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate the time. As always, brother, thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Right back at you. Take care.
Good stuff there with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. Always good to get his thoughts there on the college football side of things. We got one more guest here for this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
I'm going good, man. Busy getting geared up for college basketball, NBA underway. Got the World Series going on, college pro football. It's a lot of work, but I'm enjoying it.
Yes, sir. It is a lot of work. It's a good thing you're enjoying it because you've done it for a lot of years here. And, you know, if you kind of lose some of that fire, lose some of that passion, you know, it can wind up having a significant impact on your bottom line. So glad you're enjoying it. Glad you still enjoy putting in all the time and effort every day. And I do want to go off script for just a second here because you mentioned college basketball. Kind of curious, you know, I mean, the season starts early here, November 6th. How far into your preparations would you say you are?
I'm about 2 weeks into it right now, you know, trying to get – I got my blue ribbon book. Anybody doesn't get the blue ribbon book in college basketball, it's kind of like not getting Warren Sharp's football preview in the NFL. You got to have it, must read. And, of course, so I thumbed through that over the past 3 weeks, 4 weeks since I got it. And you know, starting to set up my conferences. I'm starting out with the Big 12, the MAC. I started doing a lot of totals last year, so I'm working on some different matrix models for that. Brought on a college football guru, I guess, for lack of a better term, an ex-college basketball head coach, actually, who wants to remain nameless. I respect that, but he helped me out towards the tail end of last year, and he's on staff this year. So we didn't have a great year in college basketball last year, which is pretty unusual for me, actually. So, you know, I don't look for excuses. We try and find some solutions. So, but working on those specialty conferences, as you know, Big 12, Big 10, MAC, sprinkling a little bit of Mountain West as well now that my geographic location has changed and I'm able to follow those sports writers and their Twitters a little bit more and kind of around that action, for lack of a better term, a little bit more. So I'm looking forward to this year, a little redemption on my mind, Adam, and I'm hoping to exact some of that revenge on the book, especially early out of the gate.
So in terms of your preparations, I know you keyed in on those five conferences there, 353 teams in college basketball, about 260 to 270 of them lined on a regular basis. So do you try to do something with all of those teams, or are you really focused on that conference specialization angle that we love to talk about on this show?
Yeah, I'm more concentrated on that. Obviously, the Missouri Valley, we talk about it. You know, we talked about it on your show all the time last year. We were constantly highlighting Missouri Valley for your listeners, and they were winning, you know, the free plays, and I did extremely well again in the Mo Valley. It's easier, I guess. You know, I even look at teams like in the Ohio Valley. I have friends in the business, so to speak, guys that get, you know, perks from me for who follow those conferences and have been feeding me information for years. And I tend to stick to, you know, 40 or 50 teams out of the gate. Obviously, you take a look at the landscape as the season goes along. Teams develop some chemistry. Teams develop a little bit of an identity, but those sort of things, you know, on the overall scale. But I do hone in on about four conferences and think I get some early season value with them, especially if they're playing the big boys and big boys are laying a huge number against a team that from the Ohio Valley or Mo Valley or any of these. And sometimes we can find some advantages early there. But, yeah, we tend to – get a finite number of teams and get to know them very well, you know. And so, you know, there's a lot about returning starters, who's coming up, you know, who's filling in that was, you know, this year at point guard or shooting guard that, you know, that are filling a spot for a graduated senior that was a stud. Well, how many points did this kid get off the bench last year? You know, it's all those type of things you're looking at. And of course, trying to figure out your offensive and defensive efficiency ratings based on, you know, returning starters, and all of it's a little bit of a crapshoot, but every now and then, you know, on a daily basis, you can find one or two of these teams under the radar where there's a soft line and there's little smaller conferences, obviously, I deal in, just not the Big 12, which obviously has got a lot of attention with Kansas and Oklahoma and all those guys in there. But at the end of the day, it is a process, but we try and have at least, you know, a handful of teams out of the gate that we've got a real good handle on and try and find some good lines on them.
Something I'm kind of curious about here, and again, like I said, with the season starting pretty early, I'm sort of wondering, as far as the week goes, as far as how you set up, you know, as far as how you set aside time to prep for the college basketball season, is it like a midweek kind of thing? Do you sort of, you know, get your college football and NFL positions earlier on in the week because, you know, you look at the numbers, you try to grab numbers and not teams. So do you kind of use like that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday time period for college basketball?
Well, usually I do Monday. What I'll do Sunday night, early Monday morning, you know, I'm up usually till 1 or 2 o'clock on Sunday night, you know, Pacific time. And I'm circling teams in football that I like, the numbers that I like that came out early. And then I'll let those set till about Wednesday to really start working them. And in the interim, I'm working on either NBA, now NBA's going on, but that Monday and Tuesday early in the week, I'll spend a lot of time with college basketball and kind of take my mind away from football. I've struggled this year in the NFL, which is unusual for me. You know, I'm a totally transparent guy. Anybody who watches me over at YouTube on a daily basis know I tell it exactly like it is. If I'm winning, I'll tell you I'm winning. If I'm losing, I'm telling you I'm losing. And so sometimes it's nice, you know, when you're having a struggle in this business to take a step back, give it a couple of days, come back. Your batteries are a little bit recharged because you're not looking at the same 14 games, second guessing every single one of them because you're kind of in a rut or a little bit of a slump. But you know, early in the week, I'll use Monday and Tuesday a lot. I have been for college basketball.
All right, let's transition to the NBA here for a few minutes. And, you know, I think every team's played 4 games at this point. Maybe a couple of teams have played a little bit more than that. Is there anything you've picked up on here so far this season that you've kind of used to your advantage in the association?
Well, these totals are way – I can't – you take a look at some of these scores and no one's wanting to play any defense. And I think the teams that are playing defense are doing pretty well. And those are the ones I look for, a game you wanted to talk about tonight, Denver. And taking on L.A. And I took L.A. last night against Phoenix as my premium play. And we also took Atlanta, who was catching points at home. I always try and find reasons, you know, to take home dogs. I would have liked to have a few more points in that Atlanta game, but it didn't matter. They came out one outright. That was their – as long as the NBA has been going on now, and it's been over a week, you know, that was Atlanta's home opener. You know, and Trae Young's played well for him. A couple of really good rookies in that game last night matched up. And I've only taken one game a day since the NBA has started. Last night, well, we had Atlanta out as a free play, but I had some action on them as well. But it's still less is more. But I'm tending to start to fade some of these teams that aren't playing any defense at all. And of course the game you wanted to talk about tonight was the Lakers and Denver. Lakers allowing 127 points a game. That is just unreal. Washington, Sacramento, San Antonio allowing 121 a game. Popovich coach team giving up over 120 a game so far, allowing 50% from the floor. I mean, these are the type of numbers I'm looking at to fade early.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And one thing, too, you know, when you look at this situation with the Lakers specifically, you know, yesterday that game got up to 4, and I think I even saw a couple of 4.5s out there in the market. Then the Lakers play well against Phoenix, and now the number's back down to 3. It's a very fickle NBA market right now.
Yeah, it is. If you look, a lot of the handicapping in the NBA goes into man-to-man matchups. You got to look at the matchups. You really do. More so than college basketball. College basketball, you tend to look at the backcourt as a whole, as the front court as a whole, points per possession, offensive and defensive efficiency rankings. You handicap college basketball a little bit different. NBA is more player-specific. You know, and how they match up. And Phoenix just didn't match up well against L.A. Although, you know, they still got Ingram and the other guy out, you know, here. At the end of the day, I thought it provided a bad matchup for them. And I just also had a gut feeling LeBron was just going to go off and they were going to have a big night. And they did, fortunately. They won by about 15 points over the opening line. They closed at 5 and 4.5 or 5 in a lot of places. We put them out at 3. And that's one thing, I guess, the best free tip, anybody listening to this podcast of yours, that you're going to get today, not from me or Brad, from me or Brad Powers or anybody else yet on here. It isn't a side play or it isn't a totals play. What it is a line play. In the NBA, these lines are swinging anywhere from 2 to 4 points, side and total, from opening line, say mid-morning, till tip-off. If you know you're going to get on a side, I mean, even though the Lakers beat them by, what, 131 to 113 or whatever it was, I don't know the exact score right now, 15 points over the spread, really a 1 or 2 point line move probably didn't bother you at all, laying 3 up to 5, but it's still a 2 point line move. And anytime you get over 5 or 6 points in the NBA, especially, you know, on the road, you know, laying instead of taking, you know, you're really devaluizing that play by not betting it early. So when you get your NBA figured out, bet it right then and there at the best number, because these lines are going to swing. I saw a total the other day. It opened up at 214 and closed at 220. That's a 6 point line swing. You know, how would you like to go buy my pick in the morning and says take over 214, and then you wait till 5 o'clock to bet it because you're busy or whatever, and then you're laying 4 or 5 points more than what the game was handicapped at. So everybody out there, I'm just telling you, bet these games early when they come out. You know what you're going to do. Have your stuff wired tight. Find your best line and bet it at that line right then and there. If you wait, you're going to lose line value. Maybe a lot of guys might sit around and go, well, I'm looking to take a dog and I'm looking to take Phoenix. I'd rather take 5 than 3 than sit on it, you know, if you know it's going to move that way. But you better know how the lines work if you're doing that system, Adam.
No, I completely agree. And I mean, again, you got to keep in mind here, if you get something that moves 5, 6 points, I mean, we're talking about 2 possessions. Something moves that much in the NFL or in college football, you know, it's 1 possession or maybe, you know, 1 score or something like that. 6 points, I mean, that's 2 made 3-pointers or, you know, a couple of regular field goals and free throws and stuff like that. So you got to keep that in mind as well. And, you know, the numbers are very important in the NBA, especially in late game situations with all the foul fests and things of that sort that we know happens, especially college. In college, kids will foul down 12 with 4 seconds left. Really nothing you can do about that. They're just playing out the game. They don't know any better. In the NBA, a lot of times you call the dogs off when you're down by 7 or 8. So, you know, some of those numbers around 5, 6, 7, pretty key in the NBA.
Yeah, you know, I've said it 1,000 times on your podcast, and I'll say it 1,000 times more. You're betting into numbers. You're not betting into games. The sooner you realize that, the more successful you're going to be as a sports bettor, without question. And you know, you just cannot emphasize that enough. I mean, I just, you know, you just absolutely have to have a good number. Or, you know, and if you start looking at one, I've looked at games, handicapped them, and it takes like an hour, and I'm starting out at -2. I'll go back to the available line that's already up to 3.5, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to shit can that one because I just lost line value. And you think, well, 1.5 is not that big a deal. It is a huge deal. But right now, you need, especially tight line games, you know, I have a game tonight where one team is 20% better from the free throw stripe than another game off this early in the season. And with a short number, that's a big deal. That's the first thing you circle. Find teams right now, especially late in the game with these points. Well, man, they came back. This, that, or the other. Look at the bench scoring. What teams are – that's a big thing early on in the season. You'll see games. You can go down, maybe not today because there's only 4 games, but tomorrow and Saturday when there's a bunch of games up there, 7 or 8 games, start looking at all those games and look at the last 5 games, which current stat, start seeing how their bench is scoring. You know, in a short number game, you know, if you're catching a dog or something with a short number, you also notice their bench is scoring 10 or 12 or 14 points more a game than the other team. That's a team you're going to want to be on. So you can still find advantages early. Not a lot of them right now. That's why we're only putting out 1 pick a day. But, you know, just, you know, basically use your head and look at some key numbers and weigh them against the number you're getting or taking.
All right, let's transition over to the NFL side here for a few minutes, and we'll talk first about game 255-256, Denver and Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs just seem to be showing no signs of slowing down. Blow out the Bengals last week, now 7-0 against the spread on the season. But the game where they were on the ropes, one of the two, was against the Denver Broncos. It was Monday Night Football in the Mile High City. Denver was in the five-point range. They moved down to about 3.5. So Kansas City covered the closing number. But Denver, if you got a good number in that one, was a winner for you there. The Chiefs are laying double digits pretty much across the market right now. At home, early kick at Arrowhead against the Broncos. What do you think about this game, Tony?
Well, I think the number's about right. That's the problem with this game here. You know, you take a look at Denver. They're averaging 23.6 points per game and allowing 23.4. Now, what's that tell you? There's very little room for margin of error. You know, Kansas City, the one thing I was impressed with last week with them, and one thing that I have not been impressed with, and a couple of things in that Kansas City game last week. Number one is you got a chance to see just how bad of a head coach Marvin Lewis is and how he continues to have 16-year tenure at Cincinnati when they can't win a friggin' postseason game is unbelievable to me. But the New England Patriots laid out the blueprint to beat Kansas City, and that is run the frickin' ball. If you run the frickin' ball against Kansas City, you can move the chains and eat clock and keep them off the field. Now, as evidenced in the New England game, you put them back out there, no matter who they're playing, it seems, they're still going to go down the field in 3 minutes and score. I mean, Kansas City is the modern-day version, because I'm older than probably a lot of your listeners, they're the modern-day version of the greatest show on turf, the Kurt Warner era at the Rams. You really are seeing that from them. They're just hitting on all cylinders and this, that, and the other. But as you alluded to, Denver held them to their lowest point total of the season, and that was 27 points. It was at Mile High. It was a Monday night game. I think it was a Monday or Sunday night game. It was a Monday game. But nonetheless, Kansas City bounced back after that loss, a 45-point beat down to the Bengals, who did not want to run the football. Marvin Lewis had Joe Mixon, who has been falling forward for 6 yards of carry all year long, and he ran him 13 times in the freaking game. I mean, so if Denver wants a shot at him, they're going to have to try and pound the rock and see what they can do. They obviously looked very good against a very, very bad Arizona team last week, and things just snowballed on them. Kansas City averaging 13 points a game and allowing 26. I think that Denver can get their 23 points a game here. And I think Kansas City might be able to get to 35 here. If I had to take a side in this game, I probably would take Denver. I don't lay double digits in the NFL. This is a division game. Denver is not without talent. They're just 2-11 against the spread. Their last 13 on the road is the problem with Denver. But they did cover one last week, albeit that was Arizona. They've also had a little extra time to prepare for this one as well, three extra days because it was a Thursday night game with them last week. So I expect Denver to come in here and give them a ball game. I think the Chiefs probably can beat them, you know, here 7 or 8 points, but I'm not willing to lay 10 with Kansas City. You're going to be catching inflated numbers for moving on with Kansas City. The only game they may be an underdog in, I haven't done the look ahead line on Adam, but they are playing the Rams in Mexico City in 2 weeks on a Monday night, which oddsmakers are not going to be able to set the total. They can set the total at 70 and it's still going to exceed it. So there's a free tip for you 2 weeks down the road on a Monday night. But, yeah, you know, I don't know whether Kansas – you keep thinking they're going to come back down to earth and this just can't continue, but they just keep doing it every single week. But I think Denver provides some matchup problems on defense for them. They might be able to hang in there and give Kansas City a ball game here.
And I think one of the things about the NFL is, I mean, look, the Patriots have been doing this forever, where they've been, under Belichick and Brady, they've been ATS assassins. We know it. Everybody knows it. They're the only team that's been able to do it. And when we get these teams that get off to these incredibly hot starts, I mean, this is a white hot start for Kansas City, not even red hot, it's white hot. And
yeah,
we expect them to fall off the pace. So you can go down a rabbit hole, lose a lot of money here, expecting this team to fall off. yes, eventually they will. I mean, they're not going to go 16-0 against the spread this year. But that's the thing is, you know, I think instead of just fading them week after week after week, pay attention to what they're doing and decide, you know, is this a smart time for me to go against them?
Yeah. You're starting to see at a number like this, you know, with Denver sitting at 3-4, you know, and having struggles on the road, you know, the public is going to be all over Kansas City. You know, that's just the way it works, you know, and odds makers, they've got about 83% of the tickets written on Kansas City here in Las Vegas right now, yet the line hasn't moved. Now, obviously, you're going to have sharp money balancing volumes. Volume of tickets written is a lot different than what books have on the game money-wise. But you see a lot of tickets written on Kansas City, but you see the line not moving because the money's almost even with Denver, and that's sharp money taking the double-digit points, and that's just how sharp bettors do it. You know, they're looking for line value and getting double digits, you know, in a division rivalry game with a team off a 45-point effort. You know, albeit they were given 7 turnovers, which obviously is going to inflate their scoring, which I'm not putting a lot of stock into that Arizona game. As you know, that was the worst performance by any NFL team I have seen last Thursday night in my 26 years of handicap in the NFL. That's how bad Arizona played last year. That's the worst game I've seen. And I'm talking Ryan Leaf in San Diego, you know, when he got intercepted 4 times and 5 times in Kansas City, like in one quarter or something. It was crazy. That was still the worst performance. So I'm not putting a lot of stock into that win. But Denver's a capable team. They've given up points on the road. They gave up 34 points on the road to, you know, Darnold, a rookie quarterback in New York. That's very concerning when you're going into Arrowhead against this offense, that you're capable of giving up that type of number to really kind of an offensively inept team. And you're taking on Kansas City. They've seen them once. That helps. They've had extra time to look at film. That helps. They're extra rested. That helps. Can they win? Can they pull the upset? No. But give me double digits with Denver in this one. That's the only way I can look at it.
One other NFL game I want to chat about with you here for Week 8. That's a pretty interesting one. Seattle and Detroit. Seattle coming off the bye. Detroit coming off of an impressive road win, although – you know, we kind of expected Miami to take a bit of a step back with a second straight week of Brock Osweiler. Seattle down to a 2.5-point dog at some places, a lot of places 3 with extra juice. So not really a clear indication of what the sharp or public side is here so far in this game. What do you think about game 261, 262 with Seattle and Detroit?
Well, Westgate's got a -3 at even odds 100. I see a couple spots offshore. They're actually up to 3.5 at -102. Totals hovering around 49 offshore and 50 here in Las Vegas at a couple spots, CG, Westgate, a couple others. The one thing that I'm not going to put, just like I'm not going to put a lot of stock at Denver beating Arizona last week on our previous segment, I'm not putting a lot of stock into Seattle winning by 24 points against Oakland. Oakland's a bad football team. They're getting rid of everybody. They're completely cleaning out the cupboards there and building that John Gruden-style team from the ground up. It's going to take them a couple years. The one thing that – if you're a Detroit backer, and one thing that you know, they just beat Green Bay, you know, obviously, Crosby missed all those field goals. Everybody remembers that game from a couple weeks ago. But the one thing – that really has me excited about Detroit here is possibly being a little underrated team right now is they can run the frickin' football. Johnson had 158 yards last week. LeGarrette Blount only ran the ball 10 times, but he got 5 yards a carry. You know, Stafford only had to throw the ball 20. When's the last time Denver won a football game anywhere, Adam? And Matt Stafford only threw the ball 22 times. It hasn't happened. That's what, and that's the joy of what you're seeing is they're finally establishing with this Johnson kid a running game. Blount is a great backup. Stafford is a stud quarterback. 18-22 for 217 and 2 TDs last week. On the road, outside of the dome. That's all you need to know. I like them here. I like the balanced attack they have. Seattle's got some holes. Seattle is very inconsistent on offense. Seattle has a very inconsistent running game. They have Russell Wilson. That's their offensive attack, Russell Wilson. They don't stretch the field vertically very well. I don't want to say that Matt Stafford is the better quarterback because Russell Wilson is so special. But in this particular scenario, when Matt Stafford has an attack offensively that he can balance, he is the better quarterback in this game. He's at home. I lean Detroit here.
I actually saw the stat this morning, and I wanted to go back and look at it just to confirm. Matt Stafford has attempted 30 or fewer passes in three consecutive games for the first time in his career. So
yeah,
that tells you what the Detroit rushing attack is doing here so far. And, of course, when you need Stafford, and you could very well need him at Ford Field this week, he's still a pretty good quarterback in the NFL. So definitely I like your thoughts there on that one. One other game I wanted to touch on with you here, Tony, as we go over to the college side for a minute. You know, we like to talk at least one Big 12 game here on every segment. This is a primetime one between Texas and Oklahoma State. This one opened Texas -1.5. The Cowboys are off of a bye for this one. So a little bit interesting to see this number in Stillwater going all the way up to 3.5.
Yeah, this is when you start worried about Herman. You know, he's a great underdog coach, but he's not. He's like 4-14 ATS, his last 18 shots as a favorite as a head coach here. Lackluster win against Baylor, Texas was last week. Obviously, they were coming off a monster game, you know, against Oklahoma. They won by 3. They won by 6 last week. The week and 2-3 weeks ago, they only won at Kansas State by 5. You know, this is, you know, I don't know, honestly, if you know me, I cover the Big 12 probably about as good as anybody. Last week, my game of the year was in the Big 12 with Oklahoma, you know, all over TCU. So I know a little bit about my Big 12 here, but, you know, a 31-12 loss at Kansas State, That's shocking, you know. To me, that's shocking. And there's cause for concern. They lost to Iowa State as a 10-point favorite at home, their last home game. They were able to beat Kansas by 20, lost to Texas Tech at home as a 14.5-point favorite. They got beat 41-17. I mean, it's hard to take them, and it's hard to lay it. This is a really, really tough ball game to call. I just think that Texas, with their quarterback situation, and fingers out right now. So you got that Buscelli possibly playing here this week. Oklahoma State a little bit of time to think about what they're doing here. If I had to play this game, I'm telling you, I'd take the 3.5 in Okie State and Stillwater.
Tony George, professional handicapper from Doc Sports. What are you guys going on? What do you guys have going on over there right now, Tony?
Well, I'll tell you what, we got a site-wide sale. If you go to any handicap over at DocSports.com, we've got 12 of them. 6 of them are former bookmakers here in town. Great handicappers, along with myself. We got a 50% off season passes for football. You just go over there and click on any handicapper. There's a bunch of them that are hot. Some of them hotter than me, obviously, last couple of weeks. And when you click on any of their packages to buy their season passes of football, there's a promo code that pops up. Just put in Vegas 50. That's just the word Vegas 50, and you automatically get 50% off in anybody's packages over there. And there's some guys that – we had a guy that went 12-0 last week in college football. Don't ask me how he did it. So we got some, and that's all documented. So if you want 50% off a good handicapper on a good website, go over to DocSports.com and just type in the word Vegas 50 in the promo code box. It automatically deducts 50% off the package price. And I'll have a top play on Saturday and a top play on Sunday. I swept my top plays last weekend. That was the good news. My NFL didn't do so well. College returned a profit. So we're going to have some low-volume cards up there this weekend for everybody. And, of course, you can follow me over on YouTube. Just type in Tony George / Doc Sports Daily free play video and a live video podcast every Tuesday as well for an hour. from a sports bar here in town that we archive. It's a lot of fun, too.
Well, make sure you follow Tony on Twitter, at TGeorgeSports. Tony George from Doc Sports. Appreciate your time, as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Adam. Have a great weekend.
Good stuff there with Tony George, again, exclusively over at Doc Sports. So my apologies for the problems with bangthebook.com here today. The site actually came up while I was doing the show, so trying to get a couple of things done while we were doing the show as well. But we are all systems go over there now, and we'll have those updated NFL power ratings here very, very soon. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 8, and then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.